This isn't a D&D podcast. Not really. It's only allegedly a D&D podcast. This isn't a group of seasoned tabletop battle veterans. No. This is a group of disaster humans out to roll bones, make questionable jokes, and possibly, if they're lucky, find some kind of story along the way. And they're guided gently by me, a sentient dumpster fire. We just wanted to be extremely clear about what y'all are getting yourselves into. That being said, welcome to Horizon's Point, you goddamn nerds. Let's get weird.
Citizens, welcome to Horizon's Point, an actual play Dungeons and Dragons podcast.
Allegedly.
Yes, it is allegedly a Dungeons and Dragons podcast. Why is it allegedly a Dungeons and Dragons podcast, you may ask yourself? It is because I have only the barest minimum of the thought, of the understanding, of the rules. I do not own a copy of the Dungeon Master's Guide, and I do not plan on purchasing one because I've made up the way this game works in my head. And so that's how we're gonna do it. It's like, you guys know, like, when you bought Barbies as a kid and they came with a set and it was like, Barbie's a doctor. And it's like, fuck you, she isn't. She's an alien space adventurer. So fight me. That's what we're doing with the complete works of Mr. Gygax, Mr. Perkins, etc. et al. That being said, my name is Ashley, and I am your DM, and today that stands for Dorkass Mushroom. Yes. It's cute, I promise. It's I'm a big ol' nerd, and I'm a fun guy. So
No.
I said it.
Boo.
Yeah. Can we leave?
You are not allowed to leave. You have signed the contract. You may not have realized that you did it, but if you notice, if you look at your pointer finger in your right hand, you will notice that there is a small Band-Aid there. That is where I snuck into your room at night and pricked your finger and signed a contract in blood. So unfortunately, you are trapped here in perpetuity. I hope that's okay. That's not invasive,
that
right?
That feels illegal.
It's like the iTunes contract. It's buried in the terms of service.
I thought I made it very clear that we don't care about rules here. And I'm not sorry about it. So, speaking of things that I'm not sorry for, I'm not sorry for being friends with these excellent people who I am going to play this game with and who are now going to introduce themselves. Who would like to go first?
My name is Mike.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
It's like the Kids Incorporated intro.
I do my best. I loved that show, so fuck you.
Hey guys, I'm Paige.
Adam.
We're doing so good at intros.
We really nailed that one.
Dungeons and the Dragons. D-N-D. There's not a fourth letter. So anyway, welcome to Horizons Point, which is the name of the city that we are going to be playing this game in. This is a bunch of nonsense that I've made up myself, and I am throwing a bunch of bones at my friend. Haha, bones. Throwing a bunch of bones at my friends, and they are going to help me tell a story in this weird little steampunk-ass world. This city that is on a rock outcropping thousands of feet in the middle of the air, in the middle of the ocean. So it's a fun place to tell a story, I think. We did do a session zero for this, so if you're interested in getting a little bit of information about their characters or the world or anything like that, you are welcome to listen to that. I hope you do. That would be solid. But if you have decided to just jump in here and join us for the first time, that is also super cool. As you can tell, we still don't know what we're doing, so you're not missing out on any of the awkwardness that was in session zero if this is your first joining with us. That made it sound like a sex thing. Oh, well. So... speaking of sex things, do you guys want to play Dungeons and Dragons? Wait.
Yes!
Okay, cool. Good. Excellent. Then we are just going to hop right on into the action and start telling this story, whatever may come of it. So, welcome, for real this time, to Horizon's Point. The dual suns have just begun to rise on your fair steampunk city. Fat lot of good they do through the omnipresent layer of fog and haze, but they're technically there. But there are already citizens bustling about, and there have been for some time. This is a city that's late to bed and early to rise, always more to do, always more to build, but the pockets of people awake at this hour are larger than usual.
Because this, my friends, is a very special day. This is the final day of the 3-day Harmonic Festival, the most widely celebrated holiday on the point. Nearly all of the 1 million or so residents have turned the city into an enormous block party over the past 2 days. On the first day, the day of reflection, citizens celebrated the whispering storm and the untamable glass with stunning displays of knowledge and creativity. Fabulously elaborate murals were painted across the facades of consenting businesses. Brilliant minds went head-to-head in Empyrean Square in trivia competitions, boasting bigger and better prizes for each round completed. And music filled the air with a joyful cacophony of sound from every identifiable instrument. On the second day, the day of creation, citizens focused their attention on their goals for the following year and on their gratitude for their city and for their fellows. People wrote down intentions, promises for tasks to be completed, and burned them in the name of the searing glory. The entire fire safety wing of the guard was on duty all day, as they are every year on the day of creation. Handmade gifts were exchanged between family and friends, along with words of thanks in the name of the majestic architect. And the Techsibition, the grand showing of the latest in tinkerers' prototypes and mechanical improvements, gives honor to them both in its dual showcasing of innovative cleverness and handicrafts directly benefiting the city. Today is the day of remembrance, the celebration of the unyielding lady and the gentle lord, the celebration of the fragile beauty of life and the quiet inevitability of eventual death. It's a day that generally begins with a very thin air of somber solemnity and quickly devolves into Bourbon Street at 1 a.m. on Mardi Gras Day. Did I mention this was Mardi Gras? No? Okay, it's basically Mardi Gras. So, the city is awake and hungry for a party. The fully automated factories in the assiduous district roar to life, just another morning for a machine, while the plants that still require humanoid workers remain cold and dark and shuttered for the day. Amity Hall in the Republican district is similarly shadowy and quiet, a startlingly uncommon sight as the district representatives prepare to march in the parade and their aides and assistants enjoy the very rare treat of sleeping in well past sunrise. Several students of the magical Fisk Preparatory Academy, who likely have not been to bed yet, announce the coming of the day by setting off magical fireworks over the theurgical district, a greeting that their sleep-starved professors will likely pay them back for once classes resume. Most of the nobles in the Roseate district remain snug in their beds, as they generally are around this time, though the high-end boutiques and shops in the area are preparing themselves for the larger-than-usual morning crowd, as is every business in the Halcyon district. Most of the restaurant owners and bartenders and tavern keepers in Halcyon have been at it since well before sunrise, and the guards and constables unlucky enough to be on duty today after 2 full days of indulgences are already in uniform and making their bleary-eyed way across the Cenary district to their respective posts, past the equally bleary-eyed acolytes of the Cenary Basilica, who have been handling the logistics of the parade for months, as well as the setup of the carnival surrounding the Halcyon district's Empyrean Square. Even the farmers in the greenhouse district are dashing through their early morning chores with a bit more pep than usual, in hopes of getting all of the necessary feedings and waterings completed in enough time to catch the majority of the festivities. But there are hundreds, if not thousands, of black roses to distribute throughout the city, so they certainly have their work cut out for them. And Horizon's Edge, the shantytown village on the outskirts of the Point's Wall, filled to the brim with those who many will say don't belong in the city, are awake and moving and planning themselves. Some will be going about the day with a business-as-usual mentality. The laborers that have leave to work inside the walls don't generally get holidays off, not even this one. Some may plan to sneak their way past the wall and join in the party on a day when most folks aren't paying as much attention, or if they are, they found a little bit more leniency in their heart than usual. But many are planning their own celebrations in honor of the things that they find most important, with the people that find them important. There will be much more to see and do later as the rest of the city starts to wake up and join in, but first, we're actually going to backtrack a couple of hours, because some people started their party in the middle of the night. Ginny, you awake, or perhaps you have not yet gone to bed, in the middle of a darkened townhome. You're in a small, cluttered bedroom, packed to the brim with books, with letters. You see a base in the corner. And in the large and comfortable bed next to you is an orcish woman in her mid-20s. This is Tessa Cleverly, the rival bassist in Hot Coyote, the rival band to your band, Do Crimes. Adam, would you like to describe Ginny for us as they start making their way up?
Well, I'm not at home, so I wouldn't have my own house coat. whatever the evening before's outfit was, but most of the top half is either hurriedly thrown back on and or in my arms.
And just for the folks who didn't listen to session zero, just sort of like a physical description generally.
Currently blue, working down toward a very pale skin tone, solid white hair, currently in a wispy pixie cut.
Excellent. So you were partying for most of the weekend and came here with a bit of a plan, part of which you have accomplished off screen, as will all Sexy Times related things in this podcast. But now it is the middle of the night and it's time for part two of your plan to go into action. So Tessa is still asleep. The room is completely dark. She has a desk. She has her base. She has a bunch of books. It's kind of a disaster. 20-somethings apartment. It's just a very, very nice disaster apartment.
The plan really did count on a more well-kept space, huh? Mm-hmm. This is a dumb question, but I wouldn't know offhand where the set list would be kept, right?
100% not. I'm not going to make it that easy on you.
Yeah, no.
If you need to roll an investigation check, you may do so at disadvantage because it is dark.
That's valid.
First roll.
I mean, it's technically the first two rolls, and I don't like my odds here. Investigation is not my strong suit. I got a 3.
Great. Cool.
Would it help at all if I said I would definitely plan to start near or around the base, and barring that, the desk would be the next best guess?
Yeah, absolutely. That does help, because it's not in the base, so that makes sense that that's where you started, having rolled a 3. You poke around and, you know, you kind of open it and kind of dig through, and she's got some random bullshit in there, a couple of photographs of her with the other members of her band, because there are photographs in this world. There's just it's the guy with the camera that pulls like the cape over his back. It's that shit. But she's got a couple of those stuck in there. But there is no set list to be found. So I am going to need you now to roll me a stealth check, because you have been, you've been futzing around in this lady's room for a while now.
Hey, stealth I'm much better at. Let's 16.
Okay. That's going to be all right. So you would like to try the desk now, you said?
Yes, the desk would be number 2 on the list. Am I going to have to investigate again?
I would recommend that you did, because you're not going to find anything with a 3. So if you want to roll for the desk specifically, go ahead.
Okay, that's a 10.
The DC was very low because it was actually on the desk. So she doesn't think she needs to hide a set list. She didn't expect this was going to happen. So you find in the pile of papers on her desk, there's a couple of things. There's a few unfinished song lyrics, none of which are particularly good. At least nothing that you would consider particularly good. You find a letter from her mother, the sovereign mayor, that basically boils down to, can you please tone down the sort of revolutionary bullshit for like 3 days, please? I am begging you, as your mother, you're making me look bad. And underneath that, which has been slightly crumbled, is the set list that Hot Coyote is planning on playing for the concert at the festival tomorrow, today. It kind of depends. So you are able to find it.
All right, I'm pocketing it and I'm getting out.
Okay, roll me one more stealth check.
Okay, cool. That's 19.
Yeah, without a problem. You sort of remember in your haste getting through the door in the first place. You sort of remember where the creaky boards are. You remember how many steps there are. You've planned for this all night. And this is this actually went off extremely well. And I, Ashley, am extremely disappointed.
I'm very proud of myself. I didn't think I thought I might get it, but I didn't know if I would get out without extra checks.
Yeah. It's just, I was going to give you one shitty roll and you made it. And here we are now.
So you were able to make your way down the stairs of her townhome and out into the streets of the Roseate District in the middle of the night without awakening her or drawing too much attention from anyone else who is wandering about, which there are not many people wandering about right now.
Love it. Love everything about it. I am copying that down into a letter that I then take to Naya's house, my drummer, our drummer, but my drummer. Is her house situation such that there would be like a person that I would leave mail with, or?
She lives in one of sort of the nicer high-rise buildings, so there is sort of a doorman situation. The doorman knows who you are, so.
Great, then that's going to make this a lot easier. When I was afraid I was about to have to climb a building, I'm just going to leave the note with the doorman with instructions to get it to her as soon as she's up in an envelope that says, open this as soon as you're up, bitch. We need rhythm ready if we're going to win this. And then I go home and go to bed.
The camera pans out on the door person's very confused face as they read the envelope and kind of say, what? To themselves. You can imagine that sort of panning out into a wide view of the rest of the city as, hypothetically, if a title card existed, a title card comes out. So, we are at the Day of Remembrance. You guys all have a general idea of what's going on with this day, but just to give our hypothetical listeners an idea, there's a Mardi Gras style parade. There are two bands in Horizons Point. One is Do Crimes, the other is Hot Coyote, and they will be both playing in the square in the park. There is a religious ceremony in the park after the parade. There is a midway that has been set up that people can visit. All kinds of things are going down. I know many of you have plans. The first part of the day is going to be set up into three different time periods, essentially. So there's going to be like the morning period where not a whole lot is going on. Things are being set up. Restaurants are making their food to put on their tables. Things are opening. People are going to stake out a spot for the parade. And then after that, there will be the actual parade itself, where most people will be watching that. And then there will be the remembrance ceremony in the park where the parade ends. And, you know, that is sort of the last. You guys know on Christmas, if any of you celebrate Christmas and your parents were religious like mine, where they're like, hey, we have to go to church and then you can play with your new toys. And you're like, that's what this is. This is the part that everyone gets through so that then they can go get drunk and play carnival games. So basically, you guys will have an opportunity to do three different activities. If you want to go to the parade, that's cool. But you have three different time periods with which to do things. Some of you may have plans to meet up. Not all of you. I think all of you know at least of each other for the most part. Whether or not you would hang out is up to you. I don't know what you guys have discussed offline. We will go ahead and start off with let's roll for it. Adam, I'm going to put you. Adam, don't roll for this. I'm going to put you later because you just had a thing. So Paige, Caroline, Mike, go ahead and roll for me to see who goes first.
I got a surprise round.
I rolled an 8.
Oh,
you okay, Paige?
Yeah, I got a nat 20. It's only the second time this dice has rolled above a 12.
I mean, what a great thing to waste it on.
Yeah, why not?
Well, anybody want to try? Anybody really want to try and beat a nat 20?
No, I got a 14.
Okay.
I got an 8.
All right, cool. Well, then we will go in that order. So why don't we start off then with Kai? Paige, why don't you tell us where Kai is and describe her for us?
Sure. So Kai is very tall. Fairly squarely built. She has slender, long, pointed ears. Her hair is pulled back tightly into a thick mohawk ponytail. And since she's off duty today, she has been on duty for the last 2 days as part of the guard, specifically as part of the escalation squad. They've been busy.
Escalating things, making them worse. Fuck yeah.
Yep. De-escalation squad. But again, she's mostly good at her job. But it's hard. There was a lot to do since it's Mardi Gras. And she has been up for hours. Kai was definitely up first thing, headed directly to the Basilica to get her prayers out of the way before she does the first thing she wants to do, which is go shopping. It's everyone's favorite thing. So she probably headed down to where all the vendors were setting up and is sort of doing that eager bouncing right outside of where they're not quite open yet, but is like waiting. She's waiting.
What is she looking to purchase?
So specifically, she has three things she's after.
Okay.
She's trying to get her hands on one of the black roses. She is trying to find, I'm assuming, because I don't want to play in a world that doesn't have coffee.
Coffee is state mandated. You absolutely must have coffee or you're fucking arrested.
There are fountains all over the city that just have coffee spilling out of it at all times.
Perfect. So she's going to drop by a coffee fountain and scoop a mug into a coffee fountain as she walks. It's canon now. And finally, probably the vendor she's standing eagerly outside is, she's looking for a French fry vendor.
Okay, yeah. There's a, you know, you get your mug from one of the many state-mandated coffee fountains, and it is not a problem to get yourself a black rose. There are, it's sort of like, you know, you guys know how at Mardi Gras, that's going to happen a lot in this episode. They have people with sort of like carts just sort of walking around selling like, light up hats, and Mike is shaking his head. No, for folks who have not been to Mardi Gras, there are essentially vendors that walk around with carts, and like at Mardi Gras they sell like, here's a hat with a bunch of pot leaves on it, or like, here's a pair of giant novelty beads. There's essentially carts with nonsense, but all of the carts also sell black roses, so you can get that pretty much anywhere you want. And yeah, you are able to find Frankfurter's French fries and Footsie things. There's like a wooden sign, and like there's sort of an F painted over the T of things, but it's still just pronounced things. And so you can get French fries and also Footsie things there.
Well, I know one thing I'm buying.
Do all of the Footsie things begin with an F?
They don't, but once again, sort of the way that they're described on their little, like, you know, price tags, it has what they are on there. And it seems like he's just replaced the first letter with an F. Frank has been through some shit. We don't really talk about him very much. He's doing his best, but this is his best, unfortunately. So you are able to get French fries, and if you would also like a Footsie thing, he will sell one to you.
Kai is on a mission this morning, so okay. she tells Frank that you're one of my favorites, and then heads off.
I love that letter. I love that letter so much, man.
We know. Have a lovely third day. I have to go.
He weeps fully as you walk away.
She pats him on the shoulder and books it.
Good move. Is there any little thing that you would like to do?
Nope, that's everything I want to do to prep. And she is headed towards the Drunk Duck.
Okay, excellent. Caroline, you are up next. Why don't you go ahead and describe your character for us?
Sure. Aoife Donahay McKay is the proprietor of the Drunk Duck, and she is a tall 5'10", 5'11", long blonde hair pulled back in a braid to get it out of her face. She is wearing just work pants and a tank top. She has her battle axe, Minerva, kind of hidden behind the tent. And she is working her booth, her bar's booth. And if it is early in the morning, she is going to be getting as much ready as she can for the Drunk Duck's most famous appetizer, which is Gizmo's Garlic Parmesan Tots.
I need that.
And she is probably working with, you know, a couple of folks who she has sponsored day labor passes for from the Edge. To get everything kind of ready ahead of time. This is all made much more difficult by a small, sleepy raccoon. She's not small. She's a fat, sleepy raccoon weaving her way between people's legs, trying to steal tots as they are tested. So that is a lot of Aoife's morning. And she is certainly keeping an eye out for Kai. And just kind of making sure everything is all set. I think she was up very, very early to go and say her prayers and get them out of the way. And she probably also took some extra time this morning at the Remembrance Shrine in her home. But that's her morning.
So that being said, while you're getting all this taken care of, you notice at some point, Gizmo has stopped trying to stick her hand directly into a boiling pot of oil to get the very freshest tater tots possible. Mm-hmm. he has stopped dead and sort of like almost like a pointer dog sort of stared down the street, like stood stark still for a solid 6 seconds. And then with a, she tears off down the street into the early morning darkness down the sidewalk. Her leather fanny pack rattling with the money that she has pilfered.
Hey, gal, mind the grease for me. I'm going to go, Gizmo, Arabella, Donahue, McKay, you get back here right now.
As you, your coworkers have no problem, or your employees have no problem, you know, watching your shit for you as you head on. But you don't have too terribly far to go before you see a figure walking with Gizmo on her shoulders. You see a tall, broad-shouldered, red-headed woman sort of pulled back into a low bun with green eyes and freckles. And she is in an absolutely immaculate white and gold uniform. And Gizmo is sitting on her shoulder with her arms wrapped around this woman's neck and making a very contented sound as this woman walks towards you. And you recognize this is your very good friend, Mary Constance Gold, the captain of the guard. And Mary Constance makes her way down the street to you and kind of gently detaches Gizmo. There's some prying going on, but like, it's early morning, it's a little bit cold, maybe her fingers are a little stiff. After a few minutes, Mary Constance sort of gives up and just leaves her there and kind of smiles awkwardly.
You should know by now that she does not let go.
You know, I figure at some point I gotta get lucky, right?
No. You know this raccoon.
Fucking pessimist, I swear. Hey, I know you're really busy. I don't want to bother you too much today, but and she sort of reaches into a lapel of her jacket and she hands you a single black rose, which is sort of the gift that is given to people that you know have lost a loved one on this day for Cal.
Aoife takes the rose and I think she's silent for a second and then she just launches herself at Mary Constance, and Mary Constance now has two creatures with their arms tightly around her neck. No, you did this to yourself. You brought this on yourself. This is your own fault.
It's nice. It's the
respect. Don't bat it.
And Mary Constance, she looks like partially deeply uncomfortable, and she's a little bit cat-like right now, where it's like, you're cuddling me, and I know that the cuddles are not going to stop, and maybe it's not my favorite thing, but I understand that part of me enjoys it, and also to fight is futile, so here I shall stay.
I think Aoife almost certainly lets go well before Gizmo does. Mary Constance might have to take Gizmo on a walk before Gizmo is willing to let go, because Mary Constance, whether she's aware of it or not, is in a competition to be Gizmo's favorite human besides Aoife. I think Mary Constance does know it.
She's aware.
I think Aoife probably grabs some mugs of coffee from the coffee fountains and brings one to Mary Constance, and probably the two of them take a quick walk since they won't be able to spend a lot of time together that day.
Yeah. So you and the captain of the guards and your semi-feral raccoon.
I took the butternaff away from her. Don't be rude.
You actually see from the other side, Mary Constance is looking at you. Gizmo was sort of like on the other side of her neck, so Mary Constance does not see the glint in Gizmo's eyes as she very slowly raises a second blunted butter knife.
I would like to try to grab the butter knife from Gizmo without Mary Constance realizing what's happening.
Roll me a stealth check on that.
Hey, that's a dirty 20.
So you were able to sort of get your pinky in between her claws and sort of like make her drop the butter knife, and very quickly you grab it and kind of tuck it behind you, and Mary Constance is none the wiser as you guys have your coffee fountain coffee and take a walk in the morning light, because she will be obligated to march in the parade as the guard captain. So you guys will not have a lot of time to hang out today. So cool. Anything else?
I think that is it for right now. She's definitely keeping her eyes peeled for Kai and a couple of other people, but besides that, she will, you know, kind of wait for them when she gets back to her tent.
Okay, very solid. Now we will go ahead and move on to Mike. Mike, why don't you go ahead and describe your character for us and tell us what he's up to?
Orion Fettelbend is about 3 feet tall, with dark black hair, very shaggy, but kind of swept back and held in place, probably by some grease that has just been left on his hands from the previous day's work.
Oh, work grease. Okay, because I was immediately like, greased. Oh, Orion doesn't bathe. That's fine.
No, like oil and things from his various automatons that he works on.
That's way more normal.
Yeah, he's wearing like a nice leather reinforced vest and pants and like steel toed boots, but all of it is kind of like riveted with gold. So he is a working man, but he's also a fancy lad all at the same time.
I can be your working man or I can be your fancy lad.
He wears a white shirt underneath the vest, but one arm has no sleeve because on his left arm, it's a wooden and metal prosthetic arm that is infused with magic so that it can be used just like a normal arm. But he's very proud of the work on it because he made it himself. He's part of a big family that is mostly inventors and tinkerers, so they are always very proud to show off the things that they have built. And he's probably currently riding on his main automaton, whose name is Cosmo. That he has a small platform on the back and rides around the city.
Cool. So is Orion just sort of out and about during the prep time with Orion with Cosmo, or is he?
Orion's probably doing like a morning walk around the city for a little bit before he has to go and attend to his duties, making sure that the garrison is well prepped and ready to go with all of their equipment before the parade and everything happens.
I will say before Orion heads out to go to his morning walk. So the way that the mail is delivered in Horizon's Point is through a series of pneumatic tubes that go all across the city. And that is sort of how mail is delivered. So Orion will notice before he leaves that he actually has received a letter.
Perfect. He's going to go and he's going to, from his belt, he's got all sorts of bits and bobs and tools with like a hammer in a loop just dangling. He pulls out a little pocket knife. And just quickly and easily opens up that letter to read it.
Upon opening it, it seems to be an extremely generic form letter announcing that his request for access to the restricted section of the Hall of Lore has been denied. It does not give a reason. It's an extremely generic letter, but wrapped up inside that letter is a smaller sort of handwritten note that just says, "Hey, Orion, I'm sorry. I thought it sounded interesting. I tried. She said no. Penny Jane." And Penny Jane, you would know, is the assistant to the bibliothecary, who is the person who runs the Hall of Lore, the giant city library.
Is it quick and easy, I would assume, to just send a quick reply?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You can write it out and then, through the tube and it'll go.
I'll just flip over the handwritten note and just write back, "Thanks for trying," and like put it away and send it away, and then take the official letter and just throw it on the stack of the other ones I've received.
Solid. So then you head out for your morning walk with Cosmo. Maybe this, I don't know. I don't know how you feel about this, but that is a thing that has happened to you this morning.
It's definitely not put a pep in Orion's step. He is frustrated, but this isn't the first time that he has been denied access.
Sure. Well, the rest of the city is essentially waking up. And you have a couple of minutes before you are intended to go and meet with your friend and colleague, Charlie Ward, who is also an artificer, and the two of you have decided to head on over to the garrison today to make sure that, as you said, everybody's stuff is all in order. And so you have time to take your walk before you go and meet them at the garrison.
I will also pick up some fine pastries and coffee from the fountain. Pastries paid for. There's not a pastry fountain, but there's a coffee fountain, but I will pay for the pastries.
There's a pastry tube. It's like the mail tube. It's like a very aggressive vending machine. You type in the pastry that you want and it just shoots it at you. That's not true. Please don't believe me.
I'll go to a vendor. I think me and Charlie have worked together enough times that I know generally what Charlie would want. So I pick up something for myself and something for Charlie and get some coffee along the way as well.
Cool. Frank sells frissons if you want one.
I will take a frissant for myself and then a chocolate filled frissant for Charlie.
You notice Frank is crying? You don't know why.
Frank, are you okay, Frank?
I don't want to talk about man.
Okay. If you change your mind, you know how to reach me, I guess. I guess we'll
beautiful letter. She really gets it, you know? Such a beautiful letter. She's got a beautiful soul.
It seems like you want to talk about it. We can talk about it if you want to, Frank.
I want to talk about it.
Okay, well, I'll take the frissant and the chocolate frissant, please.
That'll be free fritty.
Okay, well, here's four, and why don't you keep the change?
He cries harder.
Oh, no. Okay, we're going to go, Frank. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it, bud. And I climb back up on top of Cosmo and get going.
I hate Frank.
Frank is my new favorite.
Frank is officially fan favorite Frank, and he would love that because of all of the F's.
I have so many people that are real that I built, and now here's this fucking guy.
Fucking guy. Fucking Frank. Fan favorite.
Frank is now going in my notes as Frank the sad vendor.
Frank the forlorn vendor.
Ooh. Oh,
no.
Ooh.
You did this to yourself.
I didn't mean
you to. You brought wordplay in episode one.
I am who I am, Paige. It was always going to happen. Why lie to the listener? The singular listener. My mother.
Fair.
So you have a frissant and a chocolate filled frissant and mm-hmm. you and Cosmo. You make your way over to the garrison. People are well used to seeing you sort of trops around on your giant robot friend. But as you make your way over to the garrison, you see sort of leaning on the wall outside is the perpetually early Charlie Ward, who is the manager of a potion shop called Broglie and Bibb's Exceptional Remedies. They are a sort of tall, thin humanoid with shaggy, light brown hair, blue eyes, and wearing some very smart suspenders and a cool bow tie and a little pair of spectacles. And as you walk up, you notice that in their hands, they also have a frissant and they are eating a chocolate-filled frissant.
Well, Mr. Ward, looks like we are in this position again.
I meant to tell you that I would get it. I'm sorry. My bad.
We should just come up with a schedule, I think, of who's going to buy breakfast that morning.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And they reach into their sort of back pocket and they pull out a little notebook and they start sort of rifling through and they sort of produce from apparently nowhere a fountain pen and they kind of write out a schedule and they're like, all right, should it be just like an every other day? Or I feel very much like we need to kind of get this done. No. Is this too much?
I think every other day is fine. It'll be perfect. Why don't you go ahead and then just get that all set in stone. Send it to me. We'll have that be the thing.
Yeah, I'll pop it in the tube when I get home. No problem.
Sounds great.
Well, I guess I can just sort of, you know, hand, unless you want to, unless, you know, and he kind of jokingly holds up your frissant to Cosmo and is like, hey, buddy, you want some? I'm just kidding. I know he's a robot. Cool. Charlie's, as long as you've known them, it strikes you often how incredibly awkward they are. Awkward, but endearing.
Orion probably has lived it enough that just lets him talk it out. Lets Charlie talk. And talk until they're done. But Orion will take all of the extra pastries and just set them next to him on his little platform.
Solid.
It's like, we'll just save these for later if we get hungry.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I always forget to eat at these things because there's just, you know, so much to do and there's so much to see.
Who's got the time to stop for food?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I spent probably like 7 hours at the text position yesterday, just sort of looking around. Did you have anything in there this year or no? I don't remember seeing it, but maybe I just glossed over the name.
Personally, no, I did not present anything. I did present with the garrison. You know, we've been tinkering with a new omnidirectional grappling hook. It went okay, but it definitely had its issues, but what presentation doesn't have its issues?
Yeah, I mean, that's what the text position is for, right? You got to show what you have. You show, you get the bugs out of the way, and I bet, hey, you're going to
exactly.
Be great. It's going to be great.
It's all about what's coming in the future. I spent most of the day just at the Fettelbind area, you know, teaching some introductory classes. So. Oh,
cool. Yeah. All right. Well, awesome. You want to go ahead and they kind of pat the satchel that they have next to them, where you've seen inside this satchel before. It's like a mail bag. And it's got like when you go through a drive through and you get more than two drinks and they give you like a little holder for them. They have sort of potions lined up with those in sort of this kind of mail bag. I got some interesting new stuff that I think they might like to try. Try is the operative word here. I mean, nothing's going to explode. I'm not going to do that again. But you know, some of them might not work. I don't know, but we'll see. I mean, I have all the usual stuff too, but we'll see. So you want to go take care of some stuff, take care of business, and then
I'm ready.
Awesome.
I'm very ready. If I don't have to fix at least three people's equipment, I'll be shocked.
It's going to be way more than that.
It always is. They don't know how to respect other people's work. You know, it's a shame, but helps us keep the job. So
sort of chit-chatting pleasantly, you guys head on into the garrison. There is a line of sleepy guards and constables waiting for anything from to get some armor patched, to get a sword sharpened magically. Some guy seems to think that Charlie is going to have a particular kind of salve for him, and Charlie has to explain for the not zero time that they are not that kind of apothecary, that they will have to go to a doctor for that, and that they are not a doctor. But you guys get everything fixed that needs to be fixed over the couple of hours in the morning prep. You get Charlie hands out all of their potions, sort of pointing out the ones that are experimental and sort of giving an overview of what they think they're going to do. And those are sort of taken and put elsewhere for later use. So you guys spend a very productive morning getting folks ready for the day. So we are out of my used up Jenny's prep time with sleep.
That's correct.
Yeah, so they're sleeping. So it is about parade time at this point. You know, so this is early afternoon, late morning, early afternoon. I cannot imagine that is a thing that Jenny is going to give a shit about.
Not unless they're putting us in the parade and not after last year.
Yeah, no. After last year, you guys are actually banned from the parade portion of the festival. But you awaken to some very, very insistent pounding on your front door in the late morning, early afternoon.
Well, I don't love that.
And it doesn't stop.
It's waking me up. So I guess if it's not going away, now I do have my house coat. So, and it is now the hair is currently a mohawk, but like not up. We will put it up for the performance later.
So do you make your way down and open the door?
Yeah. What?
At your door, you find the other three members of your band. You see Naya Moody. Naya is sort of average height, pretty muscular, very dark brown skin. And she has this bright dyed teal hair that she has sort of pulled up into a high ponytail. You also see Gideon Fiskish. Sort of a tall humanoid with a long dark braid and is his ever-present sort of newsy cap. And then pounding on your door is, she considers herself the de facto leader of your band, whether or not you agree is up to you. But this is Minnie Fisk. If this was Earth, we might describe her as being of Chinese descent. If this was D&D-ass D&D, we might describe her as a halfling. This is neither of those things, but hopefully that helps know what she looks like. She has her hair sort of like pulled back into like two like little fun buns on the side of her head. And you see, like, as you open the door, she was getting ready to pull out a gun and probably shoot your doorknob off. It is not the first time she would have done that. But she sees you open the door and she puts the gun away and then reaches into her pocket and pulls out the set list copy. And looks you dead in the eye and says, "What the fuck is this?"
I pull the original copy out of my house coat pocket and say, twinsies!
You motherfucker, what the fuck is this and where did you get it? Is this their real fucking set list?
We're gonna win.
I mean, we were gonna win anyway!
Unless they gave the
Look, I'm not- Look, this is a very-
Are you done?
And she throws the set list on the ground, drops her gun. It does not discharge, but she full launches herself at you and like a goddamn face hugger, sort of just in a callback, I guess, to what Gizmo did to Mary Constance earlier, just sort of latches onto you around your neck and plants a giant kiss on the side of your cheek. You beautiful bastard. I fucking love you. I'm so excited. We're going to absolutely ruin those motherfuckers.
I didn't know if we were going to fight or kiss for a minute. That was weird.
That's sort of what we do. Oh my god, I'm so fucking happy. This is amazing. We are going to absolutely stomp them into the fucking ground. Not that we wouldn't have done that before, because honestly, fuck them and they're half bit like nonsense, but this, we're going to fuck them up. We're going to fuck them up. And she does like a little dance, and Gideon isn't actually related to her, but he is, for all intents and purposes, her brother. So he just kind of like puts a hand on her and is like, you have so many guns. Please don't, like, please watch where you're going. And Naya is just looking at you. She's not awake yet. She is not awake yet. And all she can do is just sort of stare at you. You really think we needed this?
Needed? I mean, no. But if I could do it for us, then yeah.
Look, I'll play whatever you guys tell me to play. But I'm going on record saying that if we do this... I think it cheapens us, because I think we're good enough without having to resort to this kind of stuff. And you can see Minnie behind her sort of making mocking faces. And, you know, she has like little hand puppets, like her hands are like little puppets, like because she's a fucking child. But everyone seems willing to go along with your plan of rearranging your set list to essentially mimic the attitudes of what their set was going to be, but then do it better so that when they play, they look stupid.
Yes. The idea is that the audience goes away saying, wow, they basically played the same set, but Do Crimes was way better.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Good, good. So Naya just sort of shrugs and she's like, so are we gonna, like, do I have to waste my day drinking time on rehearsal now? Is that what is happening?
I don't see why we couldn't do both.
I can't play drunk. You remember the one time we did that and, like, now we're banned from the parade?
I think you know I don't remember that.
Gideon very helpfully goes, she day drank while we were rehearsing and now we're all banned from the parade.
Huh. How much rehearsal do we need?
Minnie shrugs and says, I don't think we need any. It's not like we don't know what these songs are. It's not like we haven't played these songs before. We know what we're doing. I say, we go hit the fucking Midway, or, I don't know, we go hit the fucking street festival. I say we go to the fucking parade and let them tell us to leave, but I don't want to waste any time rehearsing today. I think I've done enough of that. And also, I'm really good at my job, so, like, eat me?
I have just kind of sidled up behind Naya and laid my chin on her shoulder and says, ooh, I don't know. The leader says she doesn't want to practice.
No one said she's the leader. She's not the leader. I'm the leader. You're not the leader. You're just the loudest. That doesn't make you the leader. We don't have a leader. Look, give me like 20 minutes and then we can all do what we want, okay? If I have to be the responsible one here because Gids is too... whatever he is to speak up, he just is gonna let you have your way, both of you, all the time, always. Gideon kind of shrugs. Cool, if that's what's gonna happen, then give me my 20 minutes so that I can at least say I did a cursory anything, and then we can go do what you guys want to do. Okay,
I'll have a drink waiting for you.
Okay, so you guys head off to your rehearsal space, I guess, to do sort of a 20 minute cursory rehearsal for Naya's benefit only. Go ahead and roll me a performance check.
Ooh, I like this one.
Yeah, I figured you might, you fucking bard.
It's a 24?
Yeah, good. Okay. You guys didn't need this rehearsal. This was completely unnecessary, but because you did this rehearsal and because you did so well, you are going to get advantage
on your performance roles when we actually get to the concert. So
you're letting me be myself.
I'm letting it happen. I'm letting you play to your strengths. So that when we get to your weaknesses, it'll be that much more fun. Anyway, is that how you guys, and then I assume you guys sort of go and get fucked up or go to the Midway, or is there anything specific you wanted to do during the parade time?
What was the one thing I said I was buying from Frank?
It was a Futsy thing.
Futsy thing, yeah. I would like a box of Futsy things.
Okay. They're actually mystery boxes. You don't quite know what's inside. That's what a Futsy thing is. So you essentially fork over some gold to get a mystery box of, you don't know, you're not allowed to open it until Frank isn't looking.
I will buy $5.55 worth of Futsy things.
He has a handkerchief. Like, he hasn't looked at you this whole time, to be entirely honest. His face is extremely red, which is weird because he's a Goliath and his skin isn't supposed to look like that. He is just full weeping into a handkerchief, and he has been the entire time that you've been standing in front of him, and he just sort of wordlessly pushes. You get two boxes for $5.55.
All right.
Technically, you only get one, but he's just so pleased with all the Fs that he gives you two. Because this is a person I've created. And that's what he does, I guess.
It's good to have a passion.
Everybody needs a hobby, even if that hobby is a letter. Okay, so you have two boxes of Futsy things. Make sure that's in your inventory.
You never know when you're going to need a Futsy thing.
You never know. Cool. Then we will flip back to Kai. You have all of your items. Have consumed your French fries, I suppose.
They are not for Kai.
They're not for Kai.
Of course they're not for Kai. Of course they're not for Kai. You said there was a competition going on.
I mean, yeah, that's very true. So so you are making your way to the drunk duck.
Yes.
All right. It is the interior is shuttered, as is every other bar and restaurant there, but you do see people outside setting up, and amongst the people there you do of course see Aoife along with Gizmo, who is has gotten a giant sort of rubber glove from somewhere and is trying to hold it on her little paw and reach into the burning oil of the tater tots again to try and get a tot. But it's not, she's got these little claws and they don't go to the ends of the fingers. So really all she's doing is sort of flopping, a rubber glove into a pot of boiling oil, but you see her stop immediately and you see her little raccoon nose kind of in the air. And, Aoife, you once again see Gizmo, take off down the street with a, and she, Kai, leaps onto your shoulder and immediately starts, does not ask for permission, does not even really look at you, but does begin taking your French fries and shoving as many of them in her tiny fat little raccoon mouth as she can.
I know that you only love me because I bring you food, but I will absolutely take it 100%.
You know what? I'm not even going to chase her this time. Whoever it is will bring her back to me. Or they won't.
Aoife, a minute or two later, you do see Kai approach with your raccoon on her shoulder, eating French fries sort of out of her hand.
You little glutton. You have already had so many tater tots today. Don't even try that with no ma'am.
She holds her belly.
I know your belly hurts. You have had so many fried potatoes today.
No, she turns to the side and like sucks in so that she's
can
like a
can she suck in because her stomach is so distended from all the fried potatoes?
You can tell she's trying. It doesn't actually do anything in regards to the shape, but you can tell that an attempt was made and an attempt was failed.
Are you starving? Yeah.
If I'd known, I would have brought more fries.
Kai. Aoife gestures to the signs that are posted all throughout the bar, but also outside of the Drunk Duck, that has a picture of Gizmo and says in very nice lettering, "Do not feed the raccoon. She is a dirty liar. She has been fed." Kai, it's so sweet that you just keep bringing her French fries and she does love them. However, every time she comes to you and tells you that she is starving, she is fully lying to you.
I don't actually believe she's starving. I just I didn't mean to break the rules. I'm very sorry. I know they're posted. It's just so nice when she climbs up onto your shoulder. It's just warm, and I just really want her to love me. I'm so sorry. I won't bring fries anymore.
Hey, Gizzy.
She's laying across the back of your neck like a scarf now, Kai.
Gizzy, do you love Kai? Is Kai your friend?
She's looking at the French fries.
Aoife's going to walk up, take Gizmo's fat little face in both of her hands. Gizmo. Kai is very nice to bring you French fries. However, she is also your friend, even if she does not have French fries. Do you understand, Mama?
You see her reaching slowly for her fanny pack.
I have shaken you out twice today. You cannot have more butter nabs.
She takes her hand back.
Is there a butter knife in it?
Would you like to go into her fanny pack and see?
Yes.
You go for her fanny pack and Gizmo does try to swat you away, but she is a raccoon and I'm not going to make a barbarian roll to see if they can beat a raccoon in a test of strength. Although it would be real funny if you just roll and see if you get a nat one.
No, I got a 3.
Okay. That's fine. That well beats the DC of not 0. You go into her fanny pack and you find a pretty impressive amount of gold, like gold than you remember saying that she could hold. You find a bunch of sticks, and you find the sharpened edge of the sign that used to be at Frank's table. Apparently she has broken off the part that says things and sharpened it.
Aoife is going to immediately take that away. At some point, you were going to have to show me how you were getting so much gold. Who are you scamming? Gizmo, stop scamming Frank. He is a nice man.
She is upset at the loss of her stick, her pokey stick.
I swear to God, it is like having a toddler and a teenager all rolled into one.
Do toddlers and teenagers typically have sharpened butter knives?
You know, some toddlers, yes. Many teenagers, yes. So, Kai, thank you. So, I know that I'm asking you to miss some of the festivities and to miss the parade today.
Oh, that's quite all right. I wasn't really planning on being there anyway. Happy to help. What can I do?
Aoife is going to gesture to a group that is kind of gathered behind the drunk duck. And it is two druids. I can't really leave the tent a whole lot today. It is really one of our biggest days, and I just need to make sure that everything goes well here. But while everyone is occupied, I need someone to kind of escort these kind folks out to the edge. We're going to take some supplies out to them, and the druids are going to, you know, check on their crops and, you know, purify the water they've collected. And I was hoping you might be able to do some healing, you know, with some of the druids on anybody who might be hurt, can't come into the city, see a doctor, anything like that.
Of course, I can absolutely help.
Thank you so much, Kai. I really appreciate it. I know that you haven't been volunteering with us very long, but you have really just done such a great job and taken such a shine to it that I wanted to, you know, you've earned the responsibility, and I don't really mean to say earn because you're giving your time freely to this, and I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, no, I'm absolutely earning it. I am 100% dedicated to this, and anything I can do to make myself more useful, I promise I won't just walk in asking who needs healing in a loud voice this time.
I would greatly...
How do I know if they do in fact need healing?
One of those druids has been out there before and knows who to talk to make sure that the folks who need it the most really get the attention. You know, the folks who have been sickest the longest or, you know, can't work because they're hurt, the people who it's really impacting their life. Edgers are a pretty close-knit group. They will tell you who needs the help.
Kai is visibly relieved that she does not have to make the decision.
Aoife is also going to scoop some gold out of Gizmo's fanny pack. I know, your laugh is so hard. Aoife will kind of get Kai set up with everything she needs, and Aoife is going to tuck some gold into Kai's, I guess, hip belt. Oh, also, Kai, and she hands you a wallet, and she hands you an ID for Luke Himmelbow. Gizmo stole these from, I think she got them from him at the Midway, but if you see Luke, if you could just give him his wallet so he will.
He probably, you know, doesn't not, even know it's missing.
Well, when he does, he is going to come and try to arrest Gizmo as he does daily. And
okay,
you know,
try to arrest me instead. it's yeah. A joke. He wouldn't actually try to arrest me. I don't think he would think that I did it.
You know, he is a nice gentleman, but he is dim enough that it is possible. But if you could just tell him that you found them, maybe. Maybe not bring Gizmo into it. Hey, Gizmo, how much would you love Kai if she did not rat you out to Luke for stealing all of his
Kai
stuff?
Kai kind of holds up the wallet and the ID and tries to give her most charming smile, which is not particularly charming because it looks very forced.
Gizmo gets into like a fighting stance, like she's a boxer, and she starts like boxing the picture of him on his ID.
We're a little single-minded, but if you wouldn't mind giving those back to Luke, I would just, and, you know, just not dragging Gizmo into it. It would make my day run so much smoother.
That's what I'm here to do.
Thank you, Kai. I really appreciate your help. When you come back, tater tots and drinks for you are on me.
And speaking of my coming back, I don't mean to sound ungrateful for the opportunity, because I'm very grateful you're trusting me with this responsibility. Do you know how long it is potentially going to take?
Oh, shouldn't take you more than about 2 hours.
Excellent. Okay. We can work with that. Good. Good.
Do you have like a hard stop? I can make sure.
No, of course not. No, of course not. This is the most important thing that I would be doing. Absolutely. There's nothing would be more important, because everything else that's going on is just silliness.
You can roll an insight check for me.
18.
You don't know what it is, obviously, because this is still like within the limits of what you could tell with body language. But there is something on this day that Kai is absolutely desperate to do.
Kai, honey, What is it you want to be back so badly to do? I want you to be able to enjoy the day and do whatever you want to do. So let me help you.
This day is for the Lord and the Lady. And my primary focus and the reason I'm here is to see that what should be best done to honor them is done. So this comes first, no matter what. But it's ridiculous. I feel ridiculous even saying it out loud.
You can whisper it.
I really want to see two crimes.
You want to see do crimes? Okay. Hey, honey, if you want to see do crimes, I can, when you get back, I will just take you right on over to Jenny.
You know them in a way where you could introduce me to them?
Yeah. Yeah. So when you come back, we'll go over there and we will, you know, we'll get you some tater tots. We'll get you a drink. Gizmo, I'm fairly certain, needs to return some gold to Minnie.
Mm-mm. Don't want to be taking gold from Minnie.
Oh, it's fine. Gizmo takes gold from her all the time. It's a bit that the two of them do. But yeah, we'll get you over there and we'll make sure that you're able to see them. They're great. Kai, you could just come hang out at the bar all night if you wanted and they would play.
I know, but there's something different about seeing them at the festival on such an important day. You have no idea how much this means to me. I know the work we're doing is so much more important, but it really makes my entire year.
Kai, when you do this kind of work, if you are not taking care of yourself and doing things that bring you joy and make you happy, you will not last long doing this kind of work. Do not ever be afraid to tell me I need to take a night off, or I can't take that shift, or, hey, I just really, really want to see do crimes, because you have to take care. You are a good woman with a good heart. but you got to take care of you, or this kind of work will eat you alive. You understand me?
Kai seems to be physically unable to say words in response to that. And her face goes completely unreadable.
I think Aoife's going to take Gizmo and just kind of wrap Gizmo's paws back around Kai's neck. And then Aoife is going to cast Beast Sense on Gizmo and send her with Kai and the group.
Okay. What does that do? Hey, Caroline, I don't know how to play this game. What does that do?
Are we casting spells? Is that a thing we're doing? Is that...
Okay, so Beast Sense is concentration up to 1 hour. You touch a willing beast for the duration. You can use your action to see through the beast's eyes and hear what it hears, and continue to do so until you use your action to return to your normal senses. So what Aoife would like to do, since this is Kai's first time going out, is to kind of see through Gizmo's eyes and just make sure that Kai gets where she needs to go and gets to talk to the person she needs to talk to figure out where to put the supplies and who to help and all of that good stuff.
Okay. So you're going to use Gizmo to make sure that Kai gets where she needs to go. And then once you confirm that, you're going to drop off and go back to doing what you were doing.
Yep.
Okay. That is easy enough. Also, just so everyone knows, I do know that that's not the noise that raccoons make. But counterpoint, the chirps that raccoons make, while cute, are not funny. So Gizmo screams. Gizmo screams. That's just what she does.
Y'all will get the background and context of why she is the way she is at some point when we're ready for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what Aoife is going to do just to help Kai out.
Cool. So Gizmo is scarfing on Kai, and she does not seem like she really wants to move. So Aoife, pretty much all you see is just sort of like the side of Kai, kind of like looking down towards the ground. So you see like feet moving every now and then when something tasty walks by. You'll see Gizmo's head sort of dirt towards that, but it won't be a particularly enjoyable journey on the way there, but like it'll get done what needs to be done.
Okay,
cool. So you do that. Kai, is there anything else you would like to do before you go off with the druids and the barbarian?
Kai, kind of with her her raccoon scarf, she's sort of absentmindedly stroking both Gizmo's head and tail. And she thanks Aoife and then kind of heads off and finds a slightly more secluded corner and gives herself a quiet pep up speech and like almost like semi shadow boxing. You can do this. All right. This is your first big responsibility. You can absolutely do this. You can handle this. Okay. We have to do this. We have to do this. You can do this. This is great. You're going to do great. You have Gizmo. The druids know what's going on. Everything's going to be great. Everything's going to be fine. Everything's going to be great. Okay. And then she heads over to the druids.
Aoife, you absolutely heard all of that through Gizmo. So that's a thing. You come in and join the crew. Unless there's something else you would like to do, you head off towards Horizon's Edge, which is a shantytown settlement on the outside of the wall that surrounds the city of Horizon's Point. The people who live outside of the wall are not considered citizens. The government does not seem particularly interested in helping them, and they are deeply restricted in terms of the times in which they are and are not allowed to be within the walls of the city, and the reasons for why they can come into the city are restricted as well. So you head off to assist Aoife and her underground team of mutual aid revolutionaries, apparently, to go and give some aid to these people. Cool. Then, Mike, we will hop back on over to you. Orion and Charlie have just finished their morning prep. The garrison, the guards and the constables of the garrison are in absolutely spotless order. Everything is going very well. As you are, well, is there anything you would like to do in the barracks? Anything additional you would like to do in the barracks now that your business is concluded?
I would probably get a like box of extra like equipment just in case anybody needs to swap out with anything during the day. They, I mean, Cosmo is a pretty easy thing to see. So they could easily just run up and be like, hey, this broke. I need your help. And I can just hot swap it out real quick. There are a lot of different areas for Orion to like hang off of, lean off of, hang things off of Cosmo, but they all look very intentional and don't look like just hooks and random bars at all.
He's like your own personal aggro crag.
Pretty much.
Good. Thank you for coming with me on that journey. Cool. So you get your pack together. And as you are preparing to leave, you see a familiar figure approaching you. This is a, once again, if dark elves were a thing, this would be a dark elf. I'm going to use those kind of terms just to help describe people, even though like dark elf, orc, halfling are not really terms that exist in this society. I'm just going to use them for descriptive purposes because it's easier. So you essentially see a drow, kind of average height, with white hair in his late 30s. This is Caspian Leaford. This is the captain of the constables. The barracks are divided into two separate sections, the guards and the constables. Mary Constance is the captain of the guards, and Caspian is the captain of the constables. And you see him walking over to you, also in sort of a very pristine black and silver uniform, as he seems to be preparing to go to the parade. He really should be there already, and he looks a little bit flustered. And he comes up to you and kind of gives a cursory nod to Charlie and kind of puts his arm on, he kind of stops. Like, he doesn't know if he wants to put his arm on Cosmo's shoulder or your shoulder, Orion, but he settles on your shoulder and he goes, hey, Orion, can I talk to you for a second, just sort of in private, if you wouldn't mind?
Sure thing, Captain. Charlie, if you'll excuse us for just a moment.
And Charlie looks a little confused, but kind of nods and kind of, as they're backing up, sort of gestures and goes, I'm just going to go hit the midway and just kind of hang out there. So, you know, if anybody needs me, that's where I'll be.
Sure. I'll meet you over there a little later today.
Yeah. Cool. Great. And they look a little confused, but leave. And Caspian sort of leads you over to one of the side offices in the barracks on the constable side and kind of is wringing his hands and goes, this is a little bit, I've been meaning to ask you this question for a while and I just sort of never got around to it. You've done some pretty impressive work, and he gestures to your prosthetic arm. It seems to serve you really well. And I know, I don't think that those are, you know, widely available to the public or anything. So, I was just curious, and he looks like really nervous even asking this question. But he says, do you have any research or any sort of prototypes into something that would do something similar, but for someone who had like a spinal injury by any chance? Like, you know, legs are there, but,
replacing a spine would involve, quite a bit more detail in fine tuning than an arm would.
Yeah, no, I, you know what, don't worry. And like, he starts immediately shutting down the conversation. Like, I shouldn't even have asked. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Captain, I don't mean to tell you that it is impossible. It just would take more work.
So it could, you're really smart. So, you know, just like you think it could be done hypothetically.
Captain, I don't want to mislead you in any way. I would need to know much more before I could give you any sort of definitive answer. I would be happy to do that for you, though. I'd be happy to look over everything and be able to do that for you. I just need to know more if you want me to give you that answer.
Go ahead and roll me a persuasion check.
18.
Okay. He kind of sighs and sort of pushes his hair out of his eyes and says, I mean, I think most people know this, but my daughter is a wheelchair user, which you probably would know. Most people do know this. Caspian and his wife have like a young teenage daughter who has been in a wheelchair all of her life. And I just thought that maybe I would start looking into ways that she wouldn't have to. My wife told me not to, though.
Captain, if I may ask, have you spoken to her about this? Is that something she would want?
I mean, I haven't talked to her directly about it, but like she, I shouldn't have to ask that question, right? Like that's a, why would she not want to?
Captain, if you were to ask me if I were to gain my original arm back, I would tell you no.
Can I ask why?
This arm is me now. This arm is much more than just an arm. It is a reminder of things that I have had to push through to get to where I am today. It's also very nice. It allows me to continue working even though I have at one point lost the ability to do that. Now, a spine could do this. A magically infused spine could do that. But she's learned to do this with this wheelchair, and that may be the thing that she has grown to find as a part of her now. And to take that away and to have her go back through another learning process may be just as traumatic.
Yeah, you're right.
Captain, I would encourage you to just talk to her about it. I am happy to do the research and to talk to others of my family, and between the best of minds, we could probably figure out how to make this work. But they should also be in on this, and they should be able to speak their minds on this particular matter.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And he kind of gives a sheepish little smile and he looks at the ground and sort of shrugs and says, you know, it's my big thing. I always sort of think I know what's best. And sometimes I'm right. Sometimes I do. But this isn't an experience I've had. And it wasn't right of me to try and make that decision for her. So, yeah, let me talk to Georgie and see if that's even something she's interested in. I should have. And under his breath so that you can barely even hear him, mostly to himself. You're not totally sure if he realizes he said it out loud. You hear him say, God, I'm such a shit dad. And he looks up and smiles and kind of claps you on the shoulder again. Thank you for your insight, for your input, for your honesty. It means a lot to me. I am so late. Mary Constance is going to absolutely impale me from the inside out, and I don't want that to happen. So I'm going to go ahead and get into my place at the parade. Thank you for coming by here, you and Shirley both. We appreciate the work you guys do, and you know, you work too much. Enjoy the day. And he starts to leave the garrison.
I give him a wave and just have a moment of reflection on the conversation. I don't usually have conversations like that. Mostly, conversations with Orion are, can you fix this, please?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very different kind of, can you fix this, please? So he's a little unnerved. But he sees the good intention and would probably do some research and reach out to a few contacts to see what kind of options could be had. But not today. Today is a fun day. Today's a day of remembrance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Cool. So would you like to go and sort of meet Charlie at the midway?
Yeah. What's the time frame that we're looking at right now? What's the next event?
So the parade runs from the Centenary Basilica to Empyrean Square, which is like the park in Halcyon Square, which is basically the entertainment district. And once the parade has ended, most people are going to be going to the park for the remembrance ceremony. That's like the big thing. And once the ceremony is over, everything opens back up and then it's pretty much just party until you can't party no more.
Orion will probably go and get Charlie and, make Charlie go to lunch with him, so that they can remember to eat another meal today. That's more than just a croissant and a chocolate covered croissant.
Good move.
And then they will probably head over to the remembrance, ceremony.
Okay. Solid. So to sort of close out before we get to the ceremony, we'll go back with Adam again. Adam, anything else Jenny wants to complete after their rehearsal with Due Crimes? Minnie is going to try to drag everyone to where the tavern stuff is and get everybody wasted.
I mean, I'm going along with that, but not getting wasted necessarily. I do mm-hmm. have to perform.
It's fair. It's very fair. Cool. So you guys just sort of carouse through the tavern district, I guess, sort of all of the tables and stuff set up. You guys are going to pass by the table for the drunk duck if for any reason you wanted to wave to Aoife or say hi.
I would definitely stop in for some garlic tots. If Gizmo is not there, then Gizmo does not currently get one of the two futsy things on my person, but...
Gizmo is not there, unfortunately, but man, is she going to be excited when someone gives her a present. In her mind, no one's ever given her a present before because they don't come in boxes, and that's what presents are. They're boxes.
Aoife will let Jenny know that Gizmo will be back in about 2 hours, and I think we'll also say, oh, and you know, when y'all come back to see Gizmo, because don't worry, I know that's why you're coming back. When you come back to see Gizmo, there is somebody that I want to introduce you to.
Okay. Yeah, no, I introduce me to?
Like, just Jenny or like all of us? Because like, why do they get a special invitation?
Oh, like all of y'all.
Okay. I was going to say, like...
Minnie, stop. No, ma'am.
No.
Minnie.
You can't talk to me like I'm your raccoon. I'm not your raccoon. I am a fully developed person.
Can you explain to me what happened in my bar 4 nights ago and how my raccoon got hold of a gun?
I'm not responsible for what Gizmo does, and I'm not responsible for what happens to me when I've had 7 shots.
Do you see why I sometimes talk to you like you are my raccoon? Do you see the parallels? Can we at least see that?
Fully cannot follow. Fully do not understand. Sorry.
Okay. Well, you know, we'll work on it.
I'm not sorry.
Well, I know you're not. I'm very aware.
And at that point, Gideon kind of comes up behind Minnie and just like full puts his hand over her mouth and sort of lifts her up and is pulling her backwards. And she's sort of half-heartedly kicking. He's the only one who is allowed to do this, but this is also the only tried and true way to shut her up.
This is why Gideon eternally has free tots at the Drunk Duck.
Because he doesn't take advantage of that either. He's a good boy.
Aoife is going to try to make sure that the setup is that, you know, so that she can introduce them to Kai when Kai gets back from the edge.
Oh yeah, we're definitely coming back. Just got to go win the Battle of the Bands.
Cool. I know this friend wants to see y'all play.
Tell your friend, cheer loud. And then Jenny winks. Jenny may think you are setting them up with somebody.
Hey, Jenny, darling. Does that line work? Does that line actually work for you? Because if so, like, that's real impressive.
I mean, really, the music speaks for itself.
Oh, my sweet summer children. I have no doubt y'all are going to win the Battle of the Bands because, you know, Due Crimes.
We always do, and we're heading on, and I leave one futsy thing for Gizmo for when Gizmo gets back ahead of me.
Great. I am fully prepared that everyone is going to hate my character and love my character's raccoon. I've been mentally preparing for this, because I am just so overshadowed by this monstrosity I created from my own brain.
Well, I can't buy you off with futsy things.
No, Aoife is difficult to buy off.
Anyways, I've had 3 existential crises throughout the course of recording this podcast so far. Yeah. So
Jenny's ready for her setup. That's totally not a setup. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Who knows? We'll see what happens. Stay tuned.
Speaking of Jenny's setup, not setup. Well, before we get to Kai, because I think that's going to be a thing. Aoife, is there anything else that you would like to do now that Due Crimes has sort of cleaned you out of tots for the moment?
I think Aoife is going to keep her eyes peeled for... any particular troublemakers, including, you know, a very specific troublemaker who she knows will show up at inopportune times. But she's keeping her eyes peeled.
All right, cool. Then we will head on over to Kai, who has made her way past the wall, which is usually an ordeal.
But they, the constables who watch the wall recognize you. And also this is a day where most people who are on duty are not going to pay too terribly much attention. So they recognize you enough to know that like you are someone that they don't need to worry about, but probably not enough to be like, if someone asked them later, hey, who went past the wall? They'd be like, it's that girl on de-escalation. I don't remember her name. It would be that sort of a situation. So you are able to escort these folks pretty easily out to do their business. And Gizmo, it is easy to watch when Gizmo sort of jumps off of your shoulder and tears across the open air market that is sort of like the flea market that that exists all the time outside of Horizon's Edge. And she climbs up the side of one of two people who are sort of chatting casually near a tent. The person that she has climbed on is a sort of tall, kind of lithe, half-elven man with pale skin and dark, shaggy hair. And when he looks at you, you see that there is a pretty nasty scar across most of the side of his face. And the person that he is speaking to is a tiefling, of which there are not many in the point. She has sort of bubblegum pink skin and this very sort of curly blonde hair. A pair of horns, jet black, are coming out of her head and pointing directly upwards. And they are sort of chit-chatting, and the woman looks at the man and then looks back at you and says,
hi. Who are you?
I am so sorry about her. And Kai tries to pull Gizmo back.
And you see the man step back and he goes, hey, no. I have put in a lot of work to get this, okay? I'm in first fucking place in this fucking competition and you are not going to take her away from me, yeah?
There's a competition?
Oh, come on. You're the fucking cop that Aoife has on her leash now, yeah? You know about the fucking competition. The competition of who Gizmo loves more. And it's me and Mary Constance. And fuck Mary Constance, it's me. And Kai, as you look at this man, you realize that you recognize his face from wanted posters. this is, as his title is, the most wanted man in Horizon's Point. His name is Bennett Sykes. And you are also casually aware of the fact that he and Aoife have been very close friends since childhood. One of the other volunteers has warned you that he is probably around. You've not run into him before, but he is fully wanted for a variety of crimes, such as petty thievery, grand larceny, and murder.
I am not a cop per se. I'm one of the de-escalation team members, so really I'm just there to help when things get crazy.
Oh, when things get crazy, yeah?
And then I help them get not crazy again. So not really a cop thing.
What, just out of curiosity, what counts as crazy? Like, you know, people starving to death, is that crazy? That's fucking crazy, right?
That's why I'm here, to stop that.
You here as a cop or you here as yourself?
Myself.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I fucking thought. I mean, we're not going to turn down help, you know, obviously. And I can't really talk because I haven't been helping nearly as much as I honestly should be, you know. Sorry, got other things to do, you know, can't be. You're not going to arrest me.
Maybe today is the day you start. We're all here to help, so join in. With us.
Oh, yeah, no, I already did. I fucking did my shit today. And now, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go steal a whole lot of money from a whole lot of people, and you're not going to stop me.
I want it to be known, Aoife is seeing all of this through beast sense, and
she sure is.
Bennett needs to be terrified.
He doesn't know that Aoife has beast sense up. He is not on his best behavior because he doesn't know she's watching.
Uh-huh. Just making sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has, there is no, as I understand it, visible tick that indicates that
Bennett
is watching, and Bennett is not a magic user. So yeah, you have heard all of this.
And Bennett sort of gently detaches Gizmo. He is the one person who can do it. I guess it's because he has crazy sleight of hand. I don't know. But he manages to gently detach Gizmo from his neck, and he puts a little kiss on her forehead and sort of hands her back over to Kai.
Thank you for that. And she puts Gizmo back around her neck like a scarf.
I mean, if Gizmo's not trying to eat your brain through your ears or something, then you're probably okay. But, you know, just don't fuck with my people, okay? If you're here for some kind of weird shit, just don't fuck with my people, okay?
Mr. Sykes, I can assure you that I am not here for any weird shit. Simply to help and do what I can to better the community.
All right.
And I did not hear you say you were going to go steal a lot of money. I did not hear that.
Yeah, maybe you're an okay cop. And then he turns to the tiefling woman. Leo, this is Aoife's friend. Aoife friend, this is Leo Hazard. She is going to assist you in wherever you're going to be taking these fine people today. Be nice. I'm out. And he doesn't literally disappear. But it's like you blink and you feel like the breeze of someone going past you, and he's just not there anymore, and you can't quite tell what direction he went in.
How on earth did he... Oh, that's probably why he can steal a whole bunch of money from a bunch of people without anyone finding him, except that I don't know that he's doing that. This is so much harder than I thought it was going to be.
And the tiefling is kind of eyeing you with her full black eyes. You okay there, cop?
Yes, not a cop. Absolutely okay. What can we do to help?
Okay. Like he said, I'm Leo. It's nice to meet you. What's your name?
Kai.
Kai.
Nice to meet you as well.
Okay. Cool. So, and she's eyeing you with suspicion, but she has apparently approved of the way you've conducted yourself with Bennett and the fact that Aoife is vouching for you is obviously means quite a lot here. You don't overlook the way that her name immediately makes shoulders go down. It's like a magic password. Like, oh, I'm here because Aoife sent me. Puts everyone at ease. And so Leo sort of points you out where to go. There is the point has its own greenhouse district full of very lush gardens, way lusher than should be able to grow on a rock. That's thanks to the help of a lot of druids who are employed to make that happen. Two such druids are with you here, and they go over to the much smaller sort of sparser orchards that the we can't call them edgers. We can't do that, can we?
That is 100% what I have been calling them.
That's what I've been calling them in my head too, and I didn't realize it until we made the joke about being the crit now. Yes,
it is what it is.
Oh, god damn it, find the edge. Oh god, Bennett's gonna find that way too fun. Damn it. Okay. So the edgers.
God damn it.
We done did it. Y'all made me have coffee fountains. We're doing this. The edgers have their own smaller orchard with it's functional, but it's not very large, and there aren't a lot of fruiting plants right now. So you sort of escort the druids over there at Leo's guidance, and they work their magics, and after a few minutes you can see, nothing sprouts immediately, but you can definitely see that there is a hardier stock happening. And you actually, if you would like to, are invited to insist in sort of carrying their sort of food and supplies in the boxes ready made. And so the barbarian begins to carry these to some of the tents in the market. Leo, she kind of looks you up and down and asks if you wouldn't mind taking a couple of boxes as well. You get the feeling that this is a test.
Of course. Just point me in the right direction and I will take as many boxes as I can carry.
Okay. And she points out a couple of stalls that are in need of supplies. And, you know, if she watches you very carefully, watches the way that you speak to the people that you are delivering goods to. And as you are sort of dragging your last box along, a couple of kids run up to you. And they seem to be very enthralled with your presence. There's maybe like four of them. None of them is older than eight. And they're kind of dirty. They're a little bit thin. They're like if you looked in a dictionary and it was like, hey, show me what an urchin looks like, it would be these kids. They are straight out of a Dickens novel. And they kind of look you up and down and they see that, you know, you've been talking to Leo and they saw you talking to Bennett. And so one of them steps forward and says, do you want to play Lost and Found with us?
How do you play Lost and Found?
And Leo kind of rolls her eyes and she goes, it's just hide and seek, but it's a little bit different out here. I mean, it's the same concept, but you don't know much about the Lost Girl, do you?
The Lost Girl? No, I'm afraid I don't know anything.
No, you probably wouldn't, would you? And Leo kind of sighs and she goes, So there's rumor that there's a seventh god, right? And Kai, you have heard sort of, like, people talk about, because in the creation myth of Horizon's Point, there is talk about how the four elemental gods came and dispelled the nothingness. And there is sort of like a running conspiracy theory that the nothingness itself was some sort of god. It's very, like, I don't want to say QAnon because it's not dangerous, but like... It's very like Avril Lavigne was replaced with a body double, you know? And so Leo kind of shrugs and she goes, so the seventh god stuff, some of us out here have decided that that's the Lost Girl, which is, she's just like a little girl and she rights things that have been wronged and she protects people who have gotten a raw deal and, basically, it's just a game of hide and seek, but one of them is the Lost Girl, and they want to find all of the people who need helping. So that's it. It's just a game of hide and seek, but it's got our own personal religious twist on it, if you will. Does that freak you out too much?
Kai smiles, probably for the first time since she's been out here, in a way that doesn't look like she's trying not to bite her own lips with terror. You know, that sounds like a kind of god I could get behind, honestly. I know there's more to do, but could you spare me for a moment?
And Leo smiles, and you can see sort of the fangs coming out of her mouth, but it is a smile. She is not baring her fangs at you. And she says, you know, supply runs are only half of it. It's one thing to know that we're not going to starve. It's another thing entirely to know that people actually give a shit. So, yeah, I can spare you to go hang out with some kids who think you're pretty cool. It'll make their day.
Well, they're about the only ones, so thank you.
And you run off to go play hide and seek with these children. They declare you the Lost Girl, so you have to run all about the market and find them. They are 8-year-olds, so I'm not going to make you roll for it. You sort of eventually find them all. But go ahead and make a perception check for me.
That's going to be an 18.
So the wall surrounds the city. And then there's a sort of a blank space where Horizon's Edge is. And then out beyond Horizon's Edge is a thick fog, and people are warned not to go in the fog. There are urban legends about the things that live in the fog, because basically everyone knows that this is an outcropping in the middle of the ocean, but no one knows quite where the edge on that side is, so they don't really know how far you can go into the fog without falling, and people who have gone into it have generally not come back. So you are closer probably to this fog than you have ever been. And there are way too many times throughout the course of your game that you feel a prickling at the back of your neck. Like something is watching you. Something is watching you from the fog. Something is looking at you specifically. And if you would like to, you may make an investigation check.
Would it be helpful to use divine sense in this case? That's going to let me know the location of any celestial fiend or undead within 60 feet. Is that something that would legit, like, would come up? You don't have to tell me whether it would work or not, but something that would be like, huh, maybe I should try that.
We can just say you do it. So you do it, you do the thing, whatever needs to be done, you do it. Kind of looking out into the fog, and you sort of get like a what is it? It's fiend and
celestial fiend or undead.
Okay. You get a little bit of a ping from Leo behind you, which is not terribly out of the norm. Part of the reason that tieflings, or, you know, tieflings, quote unquote, nobody calls them that. But the reason that they're so rare around here is because the Whispering Storm, one of the elemental gods, is generally depicted as a person with horns. So tieflings are either sort of immediately gone into the church, or they are not trusted. So it's like, if you're a tiefling and you're not in the church, then you are distrusted immensely, because of sort of like that fiendish quote unquote pop. So you get that from Leo behind you, and there are probably a not zero other amount of tieflings around there, but there's nothing from the fog that you are feeling. Divine Sense is not picking up anything that you can tell in there. But you can do an investigation check if you would like. You do not have to.
I would love to.
Excellent. Please do that.
14.
Just for a second, it feels like you're kind of looking in a mirror. Like you can almost see yourself in the fog. And then you suddenly realize that the hair is a little bit different, and the nose is a little bit different, and the jaw isn't quite right. And it is smiling in a way that you do not smile. And then it's gone. And you can't see anything else.
I immediately find somewhere to sit down for a minute.
That's easy enough. How long are you going to hang out there?
Really just until the druids are done, since the deliveries have been made.
Okay. So you were able to do that. Nobody really bothers you. Leo does come to find you when the druids are finished. Everyone that you came with is sort of behind her, and she doesn't seem to notice that anything is wrong. She kind of smiles and says, I think everybody's done if you want to, you know, go back to your side of things. And she kind of smiles. It's sarcastic. It's a little bit bitter.
Thank you for helping me so much. I know it's painfully obvious that I don't really know the ins and outs, but I do want to help.
Wanting to help is a really great start. A lot of people want to help, or they say they do, and their asses aren't out here, but yours is. So I don't
and it really mind. Will be as often as I can. Can I ask you one thing?
Yeah.
Before we head back, the fog.
Yeah.
We've all heard the warnings. Don't go into it. Terrible things happen.
Yeah.
Have you heard of it acting like a mirror?
Like a mirror?
People seeing things in it, reflections, specters.
I mean, yeah, I've heard people say, oh, I saw the man of many horns. Oh, I saw the red doctor. And both of these are urban legends of, like, essentially cryptids that live in the fog, and the man of many horns will take your soul or something, and the red doctor will, like, do creepy...
Take your blood.
Yeah, like, take your blood, or, like, take a finger or something. It's not, as many urban legends are, it's not particularly fleshed out. You know, they're just urban legends. And Leo says, yeah, so, I mean, people say they see shit in the fog all the time, but, I mean, it's just fog. It's not fog you want to go into, because you will get lost, and you will probably die in there, but... Not a mirror. Why did you see something?
Oh, no. It was something that the children were saying. I'm sure it's part of the game that they made up. But, you know, not from around here. Extra unsettling.
Yeah. No, they say the lost girl is one of the people who are in the fog. They say that, like, if you... Oh God, what is it? If you die... How is it? It's like if you die because someone wronged you, or like if you're murdered or whatever, then like as your soul starts to fly out of the point to go to the Lord's estate, she like grabs you instead. And like, I don't really know what she does with you. It's supposed to be like a comforting story, but like, I don't want my soul grabbed. So
I don't know. So yeah, it was probably just the kids talking about something wrong with you.
Oh, thank you. That was very helpful. I have to go. I have to go.
Okay, sure. You know, you're welcome here. I think as far as I'm concerned, you proved yourself.
Thank you. That's good to hear. Thank you. And she flusteredly, whatever's left of the money that she was given, she kind of shoves it towards Leo. I'm sure you'll know what to do with this. Aoife sent it. Thank you. Again. And she turns and heads out.
And as you're leaving, Gizmo sort of jumps up on your shoulder and stands there and doesn't like do anything, which is not like her. You get the sense that she can tell if something is wrong, even if the people around you are not really paying much attention or not really commenting on it.
She just reaches up and absentmindedly kind of scritches between her ears without really knowing she's doing it and just keeps walking.
Okay. So you head back into the main part of the city. So we're getting into sort of the last little bit before the ceremony. So we're just going to kind of go loosey-goosey now and see what everyone wants to do with this last little bit of time before the fun stuff shuts down for an hour. And everybody has to go to Fantasy Mass with the Fantasy Pope. I literally have it in my notes as Fantasy Pope.
That's his official title.
Fantasy Pope is the best shorthand.
Equilibrex, okay? But she's the Fantasy Pope.
I do think that Aoife is going to, you know, make sure when Kai gets back that she not only gives Gizmo her present, but also is going to make sure that Kai knows to come to the tent after seeing Do Crimes to meet Jenny and Minnie and everybody else. Really, it's just Jenny and Minnie work so well.
I fully hate their name, Brian.
She is also eagle-eyeing for Bennett now. He is in so much trouble.
Yeah. Go ahead and give me a perception check.
Oh, I don't think
it's got to be high because he's a sneaky boy.
That's a 21.
Fucking A. You see a man walking very quickly, and you see there's like sort of a hood up, and then you see him sort of bump into a woman and kind of absentmindedly, oh, I'm sorry, and keep walking. And then you see a hand go into a pocket. You cannot see the face on this person, but you know that trick.
I think Aoife is going to walk up, brush past him and go.
That's your angry throat clearing, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You want to step around the back of the bar and talk for a second?
I really don't.
You grab his arm and say,
cool, I'm very busy.
It wasn't really a question, honey.
So you drag Bennett into an alley. Hi, I also love you. It is very good to see you. I hope you are having a happy day of remembrance. And he pulls a black rose out of his back pocket and sort of tucks it into your shirt.
Aoife accepts it and, you know, gives him a kiss and says, you want to tell me what the fuck you were on out in the edge?
What? I didn't do anything.
What the fuck were you on about?
Haven't even been to the edge today.
Uh-huh. You know I can see through Gizmo's eyes, right?
Fuck. What do you want me to do, all right? She's a fucking cop. Look, there's one good cop, all right? There's one good cop and he's dead. Sorry, that wasn't cool. I'm sorry.
Do you really think I would have sent someone out there without vetting them?
I know.
Without knowing their intentions?
No, I know. You wouldn't. No. I know you know how to do your job, but I just... It's in me, you know? It's in me. I gotta remember that she's a person, too, because... I mean, she ain't come back in pieces, so I guess Leo liked her okay.
Get your shit together, or I'm going to start talking Mary Constance up to Gizmo.
Dude, you wouldn't. You wouldn't.
Oh, you try me.
Bennett looks deeply insulted.
You get it together and start acting right.
Fine. If you're going to be a big baby about it, fine. And he kind of rolls his eyes, but you can tell he means it.
Okay.
Can I go now? I have work to do.
Yeah, all the rich kids are gonna be here after the concert. Just thought you might want to know.
I mean, it's no fun stealing from the rich kids. They just give me fucking money.
You send Gizmo to do your dirty work on that one.
Yeah, I'm not getting in between her and the small one.
All right, well, don't steal from the wrong person, okay?
Never do. Ain't no wrong people.
And Aoife hands him a little bundle of tots and a little flask of beer.
Fuck yeah. He leans in, gives you a quick kiss on the cheek, and then he is fucking gone. The only thing left is one tater tot that has fallen out of the bundle.
He's usually not that sloppy.
So you have successfully chastised an extremely wanted criminal.
That's Aoife's brand. I don't know if you guys are getting this sense. Her brand is chastising people who think they're very above the law.
We like it. It's very good. Okay, so going around the table, anything else anyone wants to do with their last minute sort of stuff before the remembrance ceremony?
No, I think Orion and Charlie are just going to probably post up in the back of the where the ceremony is.
Excellent. Anybody else want to do anything before the ceremony starts?
Are we even allowed at the ceremony?
You are allowed at the ceremony, but you must be good. No one has really indicated to you what being good is. But basically the idea is that you all kind of have to do whatever Gideon does. He is the trustworthy one out of the four of you.
I also think Ginny would probably suggest we are somewhere near the back so we can leave quickly if we are going to get ourselves in trouble.
Yeah, you don't get any arguments from that. Aoife and Kai?
I think Aoife would rather send the people who care more about the ceremony. Okay. You know, she has done her private practices that, you know, she does to celebrate Remembrance Day. So she will, you know, make sure that everything is ready for like 5 minutes after the ceremony when like people start showing up, you know, but she will send the folks who are working for her to go to the ceremony, assuming that they want to.
Cause most of the people that you've employed today are sort of from the edge. Mm-hmm. I would say the majority of them would probably choose to remain with you. There's probably like one or two that were like, yeah, you know, I'll go because it's like a cultural thing. But the folks who are from the edge historically have major issues with the church. So they, most of them choose not to go. Maybe about two folks say, you know, thanks and head off to the ceremony.
Yeah. I think Aoife is, you know, focused more on her practices in private rather than the public professions and all of that of remembrance. So she will stay and, you know, lead by example at her tent.
Okay. Very cool. Kai?
Kai does not pass go, does not collect $200, heads straight for the ceremony. And kind of similar to the others, kind of posts up towards the back, trying to avoid the main crowd. But does not go back by Aoife's table. I don't know whether Gizmo sticks with her or not, but she heads directly there.
I think once Gizmo realizes that you are not taking her back to her mom, she will sort of give you a little pit-pat with her little claw on the head. And she is going to reach into her fanny pack and take out like one little gold piece that kind of got stuck when Aoife shook her out to give money to Leo. And she is going to kind of rest it on top of your head. And then she is going to run away.
I love that strange little creature so much.
Excellent. So Aoife, you are manning your table with your people. Ginny and Kai and Orion, you have all posted up relatively near to each other. And I think you would probably all notice each other because there is the closest thing the point has to a celebrity and a small man on a large construct and a woman who was just gifted a gold piece by a raccoon on top of her head and looks like she's maybe about to cry about it. So you probably all
I mean, you can do with that what you will, but you certainly all notice each other. And as you are all settling into place, the floats have sort of been pulled off to the side and the ceremony begins. So each of the six gods has what's called a paragon, which is basically their mouthpiece. And then on top of that, there is the Equilibrex, who is the fantasy pope. Fantasy pope. Fantasy pope. She's going to give you fantasy hope. I'm sorry.
It's the official song of the day.
Can I quit the podcast or no? I guess not, huh? Cool.
Unfortunately, you have to stick around.
Cool. So all six paragons are on stage, as well are some of their sort of aides and assistants. Kai, you can probably just barely make out sort of in the back of the stage, Arcadia Ashlock, who's a friend of yours who works at the Basilica. She can't see you, but you do just sort of note her that she is there. But in center stage stands the Equilibrex Agnes Markwell. She is a human cleric. She is very tall, but sort of averagely built. She has tan skin and sort of buzzed hair. She looks like she might be in her late 50s, early 60s. And she steps forward and everything kind of goes quiet. And all of you clock behind her is a very long black sarcophagus that is intricately carved with basically reliefs of the Horizon's Point creation myth, which is that there was a nothingness on this place. The elemental gods dispelled the nothingness, and the gentle lord and the unyielding lady sort of brought the life cycle into existence, and that's why there are people. So there's just sort of carved reliefs of that. And this is weird. I think I described it to you guys in the emails as this is weird, but it's about as normal as I thought it was when I was Catholic, that people would be like, hey, here, eat little bits of this guy's skin. So in that sarcophagus, you know that there are the bodies of everyone who has passed away in the point in the last 2 weeks. That is just sort of what happens. If you die within 2 weeks of the day of remembrance, congratulations, you get to be a part of the ceremony. Isn't that exciting? And that sarcophagus is absolutely covered with black roses. And everybody, you know, she kind of waits for everyone to sort of settle down and, you know, people chit chat. And she cracks every individual knuckle on every hand. And then she cracks her neck both ways. And then she steps up and she speaks. My fellow citizens, I thank you for joining me today on this most revered day of remembrance. Today we gather to give thanks for the lives of those we once knew and to celebrate the time we still have with our loved ones that are still present. Today we remember that while our lives are short, they so often leave indelible marks on the people and the land and the city that we all so love. It was at this point that I was planning on asking you guys to make a perception check. However, I rolled a critical failure. So what happens instead is that you all hear a quiet cracking sound, one that continues to spread and get louder over the next few seconds, followed by a deep groaning snap. And there is a brief moment of stunned silence as a large branch, along with the person on top of it, crashes down directly on top of the sarcophagus, sending a shower of black roses flying into the air and cracking the far less sturdy, thin wooden lid in half. You hear sort of gasps from the audience, sort of like a murmur of confusion. Everyone on stage looks like they don't know what the fuck is going on. And there's just sort of like a moment, like maybe, I don't know, like maybe 6 seconds of full silence. If any of you would like to do anything in those 6 seconds, you can try and get a better look or try and see what the hell is going on. But you see that this person is has fallen into the body box, basically.
I think Orion would start to make his way around to the front. In various situations, I feel like he has utilized Cosmo to help crowd control, potentially. So he's just putting himself in a more advantageous place to keep the crowds back so that the garrison can do what they need to do.
Solid.
Kai is gonna clock this and kind of use the you know, kind of like bikers riding behind trucks to break the wind. She sort of jumps in behind Cosmo to make her way through the crowd to get closer to the front and get a better look and see if she recognizes the person who fell into the body box.
Okay. Jenny?
Jenny is going to turn to their bandmates and say, that wasn't somebody from Hot Coyote, was it?
Minnie quietly says under her breath, fuck, I hope so. Aoife, you are able to, you are not so far away that you can't hear commotion. What you do with that is up to you, but this is a mostly silent ceremony with just like priest people sort of droning for an hour. There shouldn't be this much talking.
I think Aoife will start moving towards that way, just kind of start heading that way to try to get a better look at what's happening.
Okay. As you are all, as Kai and Orion are moving into position, and Aoife, you were on your way up there, and Jenny, you are just sort of chilling to wait to see what happens, the person stands. And you can see now that it is a humanoid female, short, sort of an average build with messy graying blonde hair kind of pulled up into a bun on top of her head. She is wearing a trench coat that might be brown, or it might be red, or it might be dirty, or it might be full of blood. You are not entirely sure. And she is also wearing a pair of sort of like artificer style red goggles over her eyes. And you can see now that there is a crack down one lens. You gather probably from falling out of a fucking tree and into a sarcophagus. And so she stands and you see her sort of wringing her hands, and she kind of looks across the crowd. She sighs and she says, okay, well, that was not how I intended this to proceed. All right. Well, okay. Everyone, please remain calm. This is but an experiment, one that I have been planning for quite some time, and one that does not directly involve any of you. Well, all right, not most of you, anyway. Either way, I urge all of you to stay where you are. Allow me but 2 minutes of your time this day, and as I said, please remain calm. Upon completion of the experiment, I will unfortunately be unavailable to answer any questions. Thank you all for your patience and for your cooperation this evening. And truly, truly, I honestly cannot stress this enough. You all simply must remain calm.
Does Orion recognize this person at all? If they are an artificer, I mean, he's been around and has worked with a lot of people.
You have worked with a lot of people and you have been around for a while. And you do not at all recognize this woman. And you hear people around you specifically saying, who is that? Who is that? There's like a murmur of, do you know who that is? Who is that person? Have you seen her before? And this is a large city, but it is odd that most of the people in the city are here.
Do I have time to make any sort of reaction?
Yeah, I mean, she's talking for a while. So, like, yeah, if you want to have a reaction, go right at it.
Yeah, I feel like if Orion hears you're talking about an experiment being made, this is bad news as far as an artificer level goes, and a lot of things can go wrong. So he's going to try and get any constables, guards around to start evacuating as best as he can, though I think confusion may hinder that.
Yeah, there's definitely some confusion going on. What are you doing to try and gather the guards and constables' attention?
Trying to call out to whoever is around me. I would assume that there are like garrison folk well around the area, and just telling them to get people out as in as quick of a fashion as possible, and to, you know, gather the other garrison to get people out as quickly as possible while trying to maintain order as best as possible.
Okay. Normally I would give you disadvantage on this because of the confusion, but you are on a giant automaton, and so you tend to command some attention, so I'm going to say give me just a straight persuasion roll.
18.
Y'all are rolling good today. Yeah, I would say that's enough. I mean, the guards and constables are on guard. You know, they're here in case something goes wrong. So they kind of snap out of it and they realize that, yeah, A, this is not part of the ceremony, and B, this is not a good place to do an experiment. So they start, you know, it looks like there might have been some confusion as to, like, do we get people out of here or do we try to apprehend this woman? And so you see, like, multiple guards and constables sort of hold up their arms, and they're all in uniform. And so they have sort of like a very striking, they're all holding up their arms, holding up their, you know, whatever weapon they have as sort of a, hey, follow me, and shouting orders, requesting that the crowd step back. And so that starts happening during her monologue.
I think that's all that I would be doing. It takes up a lot of time, I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're not going to get out, but they are moving away from the stage.
As Aoife is getting up, is this anyone she would recognize from the Edge or from her past?
You do not recognize her at all.
Okay.
Which is, you know, a lot of people.
At this point, have I had time to get within 30 feet of this person?
You said that you were posted up near the back, but then you started moving. Yeah, I would say you can get within 30 feet of her.
Dope. So Kai's going to get within 30 feet of her and then is going to face step up next to her.
Okay. You do that. We will resolve that in a moment. Aoife, was there anything else you wanted to do besides just try and clock her? Or and Jenny, what would you like to do, if anything?
If the crowd is moving, Ginny is moving around to maintain, like, a view of what all's going on, because this is officially the first science Ginny has been interested in watching in a long time.
Yeah, I think Aoife is just going to try to make her way up towards the front to... I think she's concerned that if there are any people there who are from the Edge, those are not the people that are necessarily going to get the attention of the guard to get out. Mm-hmm. So I think she's going to go up there and try and make sure that maybe the people who would be overlooked are, but she's trying to get to the front.
Okay, cool. So you're making your way to the front. Orion is helping to guide people to the guards and constables to get out. Kai has face stepped onto the stage next to this strange woman. And Jenny is eating popcorn. possibly for the first time in her entire life, Minnie is completely silent. So that's interesting. I'm going to say, Kai, you've surprised her. So she takes a brief second and does not do what she was about to do and just looks at you.
Well, hello there. She's going to need to make a charisma saving throw as well.
Charisma saving throw. That is going to be a 19.
Yeah, that's definitely going to do it.
Okay. Is this anything that she would have known you were trying to do a thing to her?
Nah, it's just Eladrin bullshit.
Okay. Cool. that good Eladrin bullshit. She looks at you and falters. You can't really read her super well, but she is just staring at you and she isn't saying anything. And she actually, you see her open her mouth once or twice and then no words come out.
I seem to be getting that a lot today. Whatever you're trying to do, just let us get the civilians out of the way before you do it. We don't want anyone hurt today. We don't want any more destruction than has already occurred. So what are you trying to do? Let me help you.
At this point, she sort of looks out into the crowd. All four of you, please give me an insight check.
That's a 13 for your girl.
Okay.
21.
Okay.
10 for Orion.
Okay.
5.
She is right in front of you, Kai, so I'm actually going to give you advantage because you've already been looking at her for a minute.
Excellent. I will take a 13 instead.
Okay. So who got a, did everyone get above a 10?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I got a 10 exactly.
That's fine. That is enough to be able to follow her line of sight, even through her glasses, and realize that she specifically stares at the four of you for several very long and uncomfortable seconds in turn.
I toss my hair as much as it will as a mohawk.
Most of you are not able to read the look on her face. The only one who got high enough to do that is, I believe, Jenny. Adam, you got a 21?
Yeah.
You see on her face, she looks at you, and there is distrust, there is disgust, and the edges of rage when she looks at you. And you do not know who the fuck this woman is to be looking at you like that.
Then I'm going to cast Charm.
Okay.
Yes. She's got to make a wisdom save on that one.
Okay. 16?
Oh, yeah.
That is one of the ones that she does feel, though, right?
Yes, she would notice that one.
Okay. Then at that point, you see her scoff. And Kai, you are the only one who hears her say, "Oh, you're just fucking like her." And with that, she claps her hands. And she has since stepped out of the body box, obviously, which you all probably expected. What you did not expect is for the 11 bodies inside of the box to also step out of it.
Sambos!
And I think that's where we end today.
Oh, no.
Zambos.
Have I ever told any of you about my deep and intrinsic fear of Zambos?
No, but
I
every
feel like it has round come of 11 before. Of them.
Everything we've ever played has had Zambos and like the first.
We gotta do a Zambo.
Yeah, and I mean me Paige, not me Kai.
Yeah. So yeah, apparently I do have a, and I mean, you don't necessarily have to fight the zombie. She just said she was doing an experiment. If you take her at her word or not, that's up to you. But wow, Jenny, she sure does seem to hate you for some reason.
There's no accounting for taste.
Excellent. So we will pick up right from there next time. But hey, if you've stuck with us for this journey so far, man, we sure do appreciate it, because I am having a lot of fun and I hope you guys are having a lot of fun. And I know it was a little awkward with everybody being mostly separate for most of this, but it was always my intent to get you guys together at this. And you have all clocked that this strange woman has clocked the four of you specifically. So that gives you something to go on.
Me.
Thanks, I hate it.
Hooray!
Yay. I've caused harm. Hooray!
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
So, thank you everybody for sticking with us this far. We really appreciate it. This is probably going to be a long episode. It's probably going to be a little bit longer than many episodes. I think our goal is to try and keep them in between an hour and 1.5 hours most of the time. So if that affects your listening enjoyment and all, that's our intent, and we'll see how that goes. So I guess for now, we will go ahead and sign off from the point. This is your dork-ass mushroom saying goodnight, folks. Okay, so it's back on. All right, now I have to work myself up again. Gotta get into a frenzy, bitches. Gotta get into a frenzy, bitches. I'm not wearing a bra, and this could be difficult if I hit my microphone with my titties.